I want to start by reading one of the best cold emails I've ever received from our guest today, Jason Bay. Here's how it starts. Hi, Josh. I've been listening to your podcast for the last several months. I really have enjoyed the episode you recently did with Jackie Lipnicki on cold calling and how she used different value props. I was actually able to apply that to my old to my own cold outreach, and I'm seeing some results. I know you probably get hit up a ton, but was wondering if you're accepting guests. Thought we could talk about a formula I've developed for increasing video and email response rates. Would that be something your audience might find valuable? Happy to provide them with a PDF that summarizes the formula too. If you're not in need of any guests right now, that's okay. But if you are, let's chat. And in any event, thanks for the podcast. Keep up the great work. If that was Oscar worthy, you would get an Oscar, Jason. Nice job on that email.
I appreciate that, man.
Do you send emails like this all the time, or am I a special snowflake?
Well, I hate to say it, Josh, you're not a special snowflake. Well, you know, one of the things that we did, you know, this must have been a year and a half ago, is I said, hey, I want to get on other podcasts so that we can get, you know, some social proof and also connect with these people that I've been listening to their podcasts a ton. So reaching out to them was the logical thing to do. And I had some imposter syndrome around that, of course, but I was like, hey, if I want to hop on your show and talk about prospecting, I should probably send a good cold email, right?
Well, it's interesting because I get, as I'm sure you do, I get a lot of cold emails all the time with people wanting to be on the podcast, and mm-hmm. I ignore, I'd say, I don't know, 99% of them, but this one really stood out. And I thought we could start by just walking through it and helping people to just understand what it was about this particular email that it seems has caught my attention, and I would imagine the attention of other people, so that people can maybe just reverse engineer at least the thinking behind it. And I'd like to just go like line by line and understand the psychology behind the words.
Sure.
If we could. So you kind of open this email with this sentence: I've been listening to your podcast for the last several months. Now, a lot of emails start that way, and then they kind of jump into, I want to be on your podcast. But you added an extra sentence here, and sentence was, you know, hey, I really enjoyed your episode with Jackie on cold calling and how you use different value props. Was actually able to apply this to my old cold calling approach, and I've seen some, you know, good results. Talk to me a little bit about the psychology here of that opening line. It's so critical because it's what I see when I'm opening emails on my phone.
Yeah. So there's a couple things going on there. I mean, people are naturally on guard when someone reaches out to them that you don't know who they are, right? It could even be someone knocking on your door. It could be you walking by. You like to use the mall analogy a lot, right? It could be you walking by someone at the mall. You're naturally going to be on guard because the experience, and that's where I like to start, is I always think about, like, for Josh, what is the typical experience of someone that has a podcast on the receiving end of cold outreach? They do exactly what you just said. People reach out to them and they offer some fake sort of rapport, I guess you could call it, and pretend to like something and don't actually take the time to listen to the podcast. So I think this, like, just being authentic and saying, hey, let me think about what Josh goes through on the receiving end of this, and let me do the opposite of that, is what I was thinking. And I wanted to show you that I did my homework and that I had a purpose for reaching out to you. So the big thing there is I want to show you, especially a guy that's going to be critical of this kind of thing, that I want to say something in that first sentence that would be impossible for me to copy and paste and put into an email and send to another person that hosts a podcast on sales.
You know, I really love that, you know, thinking. The other thing that jumped out at me when I was reading it, and this is also actually a video that Jason shot, but I'm just lifting the copy for the podcast. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that you did in here that really jumped out at me was when you said, hey, you know, I was actually able to apply this and have seen some, you know, traction. It's been improving my cold calling. It makes the work feel validated. I know you can't do this with everybody that you reach out to, and you certainly don't want to fake it. But to the extent that you can actually show that what you observed actually had a material impact on you. It validates your work. And that's like getting an adrenaline shot. Like, it's like, wow, dude, that felt like really good. Not just the compliment, but hey, I use this and it actually helped me.
Yeah. The analogy I would use is think about, have you ever done any volunteer work, like a retirement home or anything like that? You know, cook food.
I have actually, in a retirement home, coincidentally.
Yeah. And there's a lot of those in Florida, right? in fact, are you sitting in a retirement home right now recording this podcast? Or
easy, buddy. Easy. I'm only 50.
Yeah. So I used to volunteer at a retirement home my senior year in high school. And one of the things that, you know, it's a lot of work doing that, right? And you don't necessarily do it for the recognition, but it feels really, really good when it's acknowledged. When you help someone and to have someone that's maybe feeling a little bit lonely or their family doesn't come and visit them or whatever, to just say, hey, Jason, you're a kid. I know you could probably be doing a lot of other things right now, but like, thanks for spending this time with me. It really validates the reason why I do that. And the reason why I volunteer, and I don't do a ton of this as much anymore, but at that time, I did it really for selfish reasons. Also, I didn't just do it to help people. It made me feel good to help people, to have a bit of acknowledgement into something that I put a lot of hours into and had a lot of passion for, felt really good. Which anyone in our space that does a podcast or creates content, I imagine you have a lot of passion and energy that you put into this. So yeah, it feels good to know that that's actually helping people, which is your number one goal at the end of the day, I would assume anyways.
Yeah, look, to your point, everyone likes to feel validated. It's why you look to see how many people liked something on Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn. It's why when I log into LinkedIn every day, the first place I look is the messages section, or you look at the comments. It's just social proof, and it feels good when people validate your work. And when you feel good, you're more likely to keep reading the email. The other thing that you said that I want to spend a little bit more time on, and you mentioned this, and I think it's really smart, is it didn't feel copy and pasted. There's a psychological, you know, phenomenon, if you will, called social loafing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of that term before, but essentially it's this idea that, you know, when you're a part of a group, if you're in college and the professor said, hey, everyone's going to work on this project, and there's like seven people, there's going to be some people in the group that are not going to work as hard because it's not just them. There's like a lot of other people in the group. Or if you're playing tug of war, you might not pull as hard as you would if it was just you. And so when you feel like you're part of a group and the message is for everyone, there's no stakes for you. You don't feel special. You don't feel like it's just for you. And you have a tendency to, you know, zone out a little bit. And so by making it more specific and more crispy, you kind of make it feel like it's just intended for me. Like I'm actually playing tug of war by myself.
Yeah, I wanted to have that Kentucky Fried Chicken level of crispy. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's a really important thing. It's so easy to sniff out something that's fake. And I think that as reps, especially sometimes when you're prospecting, you don't think about the fact that you're reaching out to more than just an email address or calling more than a phone number. You don't think about the fact that this is probably an intelligent person. If you're reaching out to them and they're in a position where they can make a decision on purchasing your product or service, they've gotten there for a reason. They're probably pretty intelligent and they've been around the block. So if they can sniff anything like that, it's so easy to make it stick out that I don't know. And you might have some more insight into the psychology around this, but I'm wondering why more people don't do it, because it doesn't really actually, it didn't take me that much time to put together the email. I had already been listening to your podcast, but honestly, it took me 2 or 3 minutes to write that email and record the video. It's not like I spent hours thinking of what I was going to say to Josh to really impress him with my level of crispiness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I also think too, Jason, and this is the impression that I got when I watched the video, which I think even made it more powerful, is that you actually genuinely cared.
Yeah.
Like I didn't get a sense that you're kind of going through the motions to hit some arbitrary number that you had reached out to 50 people. And maybe you didn't. There's nothing wrong with that. Who cares how many people? Like when I sense this, I'm like, you know what? He's really genuine and he really does care. And I think that's at the core of it, what it really was, which was you did care. Like when you reached out. And I don't think you can fake that to a degree. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I did reach out to several other people, but they all got a personalized message. You know what I mean? With a different reason for why I wanted to talk to them. So The caring thing is really interesting to me because, and I'm curious your thoughts on this too. I don't know that you can make someone care about helping someone. I don't know if you can actually make that. I think that is a little bit more innate. I think it can be motivated, but I don't know if someone can do that for the long term. If it's not a natural part of how they were raised or something there, but the genuine caring, I always call it leading with curiosity instead of being assumptive when you're prospecting. Like that natural curiosity of like, hey, I wonder how I can help Josh.
I think it's key. And I think if you work for a company and you don't understand the before and after version of the infomercial, so you have the person in the kitchen trying to make French fries with a knife. It's the only way they know how to make the fries. The fries are coming out not great. The family throws half of them in the garbage, which doesn't make you feel good. It takes an hour and a half to clean up the kitchen. And sometimes you cut your fingers, but it's just the only way someone knows how to make fries. And you're selling the potato peeler 3000, which helps you make crispy fries in 3 minutes without the mess. Like if you don't clearly understand the before and after that you can genuinely make a material difference in someone's life, then your emails are not going to be as strong. Whereas if you're, you know, hey, I know I'm reaching out to this person that makes French fries every night with a knife. I mean, I think that's the perception that I got when I read your email, which is, hey, I've spun through some of your podcast episodes and I really believe that I have a topic that I think could benefit from your audience. So before Jason, there is not this topic. And then after Jason, there is this topic. And this is why I think your audience would like it. So I do think if you're working for a company and you don't understand the before and after and how you might or potentially be able to help them make the fries quicker, you got to start there. And some easy ways to do that, not to get off too much on a sidebar, is to actually just see if you can talk to a couple customers and understand the before and the after. Talk to some people on customer success, listen to some discovery calls, maybe just the inbounds, and understand like what prompted them to want to talk to a salesperson, because that's the last thing people want to do. And just understand who you're reaching out to. And if you're treating everyone the same with the same message, that's a telltale sign that you're not really caring as much as you could.
Yeah. No, I agree with this 100%. I think the thing that you're really getting to is, you know, why do people decide to take a meeting? Like, what's the psychology behind that? And really, when someone buys something, they're just agreeing to change. They're saying, yes, like I'm sold on changing. So when you're prospecting, you're not trying to sell them on change. All you're really trying to do is see if they're interested in a conversation around what it might be like to change. But you have to understand what that change is. So one thing with everything you said just now is you didn't say features or benefits, right? This is like moving beyond the features and the benefits. And that's like, especially in the land you deal with, you work with a lot of tech companies, right? SaaS companies. And a lot of it is extremely feature and benefit focused. It's like, we have this widget and it'll save you time. We have this widget that will make you more profitable or increase your top line revenue. But you really have to start before that and look at like, hey, what does the before picture look like? Like, what is the challenge? Or it might be pain that people are experiencing, or it might be a pain they don't even know, you know, that they have. And then what is the result? Like, what does that transformation look like? It's the equivalent of the commercial with the person driving the Mercedes or whatever other car, and they have that huge grin on their face, right? Like, what is that transformation? And I don't think that a lot of companies really teach, you know, what that is, because I'm assuming it's because they get so much training on product where they come in and they know all the features and the benefits of the product, but they don't actually know very much about the prospect.
It's a great point, and I think it is a step that is often overlooked, and it's even more complicated because as a new salesperson or an SDR, you've probably never done the job of the person that you're reaching out to. So if you're an SDR selling to CMOs or IT professionals, like what do you know about their world? And so I think you're making a great point. All right, so the next sentence you have, which I really loved, was this is the sentence. I know you probably get hit up a ton, but was wondering if you're accepting guests. So Jason, to start off, tell us a little bit about the psychology. Every word Jason is writing is deliberate. And I'm not suggesting that you steal the words. Sure you can, but it's the psychology that Jason's going to walk you through that's really going to help you best apply these types of principles to your audience. So Jason, talk to us a little bit about that sentence. I know you probably get hit up a ton, but was wondering if you're accepting guests.
Well, that's empathy, right? There's a lot of talk on what empathy is and isn't. And I think that it's oftentimes confused with sympathy. Of course, that's a big one I see, right? I feel sorry for you versus I can see why you feel that way. And then the other thing too, and I have to mention this because I saw a very prominent sales leader write a LinkedIn post several months back about how he was really questioning whether empathy was required in sales. And I was just blown away. But when I read the article, his definition of empathy was, well, if the prospect is, you know, feeling down, like you shouldn't also feel down. And that's not what empathy is. That's what an empath does, right? Like they can feel the feelings of other people. So empathy is just simply, from a prospecting standpoint, let me think about what it's like for Josh and how can I show Josh that I understand a little bit about what it's like in his world? Well, I know because I've had a podcast before and we have a podcast now, I know that people get hit up a ton. And I know the most frustrating part about that is they don't do any of the work for you. They don't suggest topics. So now, like, so I like to think a lot about, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but the user experience of someone on the receiving end of a cold email. And you're probably familiar with design thinking, like the, you know, companies that build cool products like HBO and digital products or Apple and physical products. The first step in design thinking is empathy. They think about what is the user experience like who is this person that's going to be using it and how will they use it? You can apply that same thinking with email. When Josh opens up an email from someone that's, you know, saying, I want to get on your podcast, and I have to make him click over to all these different things and then also burn calories thinking about what he would want to talk with Jason about, I know that you're not going to do that, dude. You know what I mean? So that line is just acknowledging, just in a sentence, hey, I bet you probably get hit up a lot. I'm just saying, I know a little bit about what it's like to live in your world, man.
Yeah, and there's something really magical that happens when people feel understood. Again, not to get off on a sidebar here, but the best person in this space that I know of is a gentleman by the name of Chris Voss.
Yep.
The former hostage negotiator turned business-to-business negotiation coach. And he writes a lot about how to make people feel understood. And when people feel understood, you create an environment where people feel comfortable opening up and talking to you and certainly getting at more truth. And bringing up what I'm thinking is a very powerful skill because when you're joining the conversation, in my mind, as a legendary copywriter Robert Collier said, I feel like you get me and you're not a robot and you're not being assumptive. And because you understand me, the second sentence does its job, which is I'm going to keep reading the next sentence. So again, each sentence that Jason is writing is really intended to get me to read the next sentence. It's pulling me down the little email funnel. So to the extent that you can actually understand what someone's thinking. I read another email somewhere along the way. I don't remember where this was, but it said something to the effect of, you know, I know you get hit up by dev shops all the time, but if you promise to give me two sentences before you hit delete, I'll show you why it's worth it. You know, something like that, which is another way to be empathetic, meaning that, you know, this prospect gets hit up all the time by dev shops vying for their business. And so you just own that and you state it in your email. So that was really well done. And I also liked the other phrase here, like hit up a ton. To me, that is real casual language.
Yep.
So many times in emails, I feel that people are being very formal. They put on this voice that they feel is the way they have to speak in emails. They use a very formal voice. They would never sound like that if they were sitting across from you having a cup of coffee.
Yeah. And it's really thinking about how do you talk to your peers? Because when you're doing cold outreach, even if you're quote unquote just a rep, which I hate when SDRs or BDRs say that, I'm just an SDR, you're going to get treated like that, you know, and you really want to be a peer. People want to talk to their peers. So think about, yeah, if you're sitting down having coffee or happy hour or whatever, like how would you talk to your peer? And I don't know about you, but the way that I like to approach cold emails when writing them and the way that we coach our clients is let's just talk out the problem, like let's talk out that before and after. Let's talk it out loud. Let's get the talking points out loud and then try to capture that in the email versus writing the email. For some reason, and I think it's because people don't, you know, you don't practice copywriting a lot as a salesperson. So it's probably just a skill that we're less familiar with. But if you start talking it out loud first and then try to capture that in your writing, it'll be much more conversational.
I love that. And so a great tip here is to print out your email and read it out loud. And if it doesn't sound like something that you would say to someone over coffee, go back out and try to use words that you would if you were just to talk it out.
Yep.
So that's a great tip. Okay, the next sentence is also very interesting. And so Jason talked a little bit about this earlier in the podcast, is you have to be able to bring a new idea to the table that's going to make someone happier. And of course, happiness is relative to who you're reaching out to. What would make me happier is different than what would make Jason happier and what would make you happier. But what makes people happy is two things. Thing number one is they want to move away from a problem they might not even know they have. Or more importantly, especially for cold outreach, they want to move towards something that they desire, an aspiration. So I'm always going to be on the lookout for bike tires that are more puncture resistant and that are faster. It's why you're listening to this podcast. You might not have a problem, but you always want to level up. So what I really like here about this sentence, and I'll read it again in a second, is that it's aspirational. It's showing what my audience is going to gain from it, that intent that is also going to make me happier, because if my audience is happier, they're going to continue to listen to the podcast. They might tell their friends, and I'm going to expand my reach. And the more reach that I have, the more sales I make. So the sentence goes like, hey, I've spun through your podcast and I've got an idea that I think your audience would find interesting. I've developed a formula for how they can increase their video and email response rates. So again, this is something that I did not cover in a podcast episode, and it is something that my audience would care about. And because my audience cares about it, that's going to make me happier. Let me contrast that with a lot of the messages that I typically get, which is, I have been on 80 podcasts. I have won 35 awards. I have written a book on this. I have done this. I have done it. It's about what they are and not what they can help my audience do better.
Yeah. I mean, one of the big things that we talk about that's part of that formula, the reply method, the why stands for you oriented. It's make the prospect the hero. Talk about how you can help someone. And Donald Miller, from, I think you're a fan of too. I think you've heard you talk about him over at StoryBrand. Yeah, sort of inspired by him. It's like, hey, make the hero in the hero's journey the person that you're reaching out to. And I think there's a social proof element to this. And actually, this is something I'm curious in your take. I think you have to have a little bit of social proof. So I think in that email, I put in, and by the way, here's a few other interviews I've been on where I've talked about this. But I didn't make it like, I'm so great. Look at me. I've been featured on Sales Hacker and Outreach Sales Engagement Podcast. You know what I mean? It was just like, hey, if you want to check out some stuff, here's some people that I know that you know who they are. And that social proof definitely helps. But there's definitely a very nuanced way of going about that for sure.
Yeah. And the way you did it was amazing, because when you start to lead with how great you are, it's off-putting.
Yep.
Like every time I meet someone and they start bragging about how awesome they are, it's a turnoff.
Yeah.
But you did it in a very subtle way. Like, hey, here's an idea that I think would make your audience more awesome, which would make me more awesome. And oh, by the way, in case you want to check me out, I've been on a couple. It's almost like, oh, by the way, not front and center.
Yeah.
And so many of the outreaches that I get from other people trying to be on the podcast or even cold outreaches is, let me tell you how great I am. And the problem with you telling people how great you are is that I don't believe you, because of course you're going to say that. You're biased. You have an ulterior motive. And people are very skeptical of salespeople or anybody telling them how amazing they are. And it just doesn't feel good. Even in your personal life, if you meet someone that's telling you how amazing they are, you're probably turned off by that person. You probably go away from them and talk behind their back and go, God, dude, that person was pretty full of themselves.
Yeah, it's amazing how much of this is almost common sense.
Yeah.
Like if I met you at a networking event and I walked up to you and the very first thing I said was, hi, I'm Jason. So I run a company called Blissful Prospecting, and we have all this stuff. And by the way, I'd love to meet with you at another time and take up 30 minutes of your time and talk to you about all the things that we sell, because I'd love to sell those things to you. Yeah, that's essentially the equivalent. Like, we would never do that, right? That's the equivalent of what we do in a cold email or a cold call. For some reason, we think that it's different when it's really more like the in-person conversation you would have with someone at a networking event. It's more like that than it isn't.
It's so true. Something else that you did that I really liked in this email, it was like, hey, you know, happy to provide your posse with a PDF that summarizes the formula too. That's something that my audience could take away that would be also really, really valuable. This is how you close it, right? So if you're not in need of any guests right now, that's okay. But if you are, let's chat. In any event, thanks for the podcast. Keep up the great work. So Jason, what's going on with that final sentence?
I don't always use that like when I'm prospecting, but when I'm reaching out to people that I look at and anyone else running a podcast, I want to be peers with these people, right? And I don't want them to feel bad about saying no. And I don't just want our conversation to be a podcast and I never talk to that person again. So for me, it's about how would I ask a friend for a favor? And if I ask my friend for a favor, especially it's going to take up some of their time and then also their reputation where there is on the line where they're going to be promoting me, essentially, I want to give them a really easy way out of that so that they don't feel any pressure around saying no. And there's a lot of psychology that we can get into around that. But when you make it easier for people to say no, Chris Voss talks a lot about autonomy, right? It gives you your autonomy back. It makes you feel like you have a choice in the matter versus this assumptiveness, you know, that we were taught in sales a long time ago around we have to assume the sale, you know.
I love that. It sort of subconsciously tells the brain that there's no pressure here.
Yeah.
And again, the way in which you phrased it, you know, it's okay. I'm sure, you know, you might not need this now. It's just a very nice, casual, relaxed way of saying, hey, there's no pressure here and I'm not going to assume that what I have is what you need at this particular moment. And then at the end, again, you mentioned this before, it's like, hey, here's a few podcasts I've been on. But notice you're not leading with that. That's sort of toward the tail end.
Yeah.
So this email, yes, it's for Jason to get on a podcast. But Jason, is this formula that you used similar to what you would do if you were trying to reach out to a company or a person in a company to see if they're open to starting a conversation with you around a product or a service that you think can help them be happier?
Yes, it's very, very similar. It doesn't quite follow it exactly because when I'm reaching out to you, it's the equivalent of reaching out, you know, for a partnership, right? I'm trying to start a conversation around something that doesn't involve either of us paying each other money. So it's just a tiny bit different in the wording, but the formula for the most part is, hey, you start out with something personalized. You need to have some sort of empathy in there and some acknowledgement around who you're reaching out to and showing them that you understand a little bit about what's going on in their world. And then this relevant results piece, I need to have something in there around this before and after, right? What can I do to help you in an area that you really care about that's important to you? And then making you the hero, right? Making the email about you instead of me. So yeah, to answer your question, it's a very, very, very similar formula that I use when I prospect, you know, and want to help companies with their prospecting. And it's very similar, obviously, to what we teach our customers.
Now, Jason, what's your philosophy on follow-up? I read somewhere that it takes 975 follow-ups now over the course of 3 days to get someone to respond. Or is it 980 now? I can't quite keep track. I think Gong says it's 1,000. I don't know. What is it?
Yeah. So I like to use for outbound cadences, the general rule of thumb, you know, Outreach, Sales Loft, Zant, VanillaSoft, they're all going to give you the same numbers. The data, for the most part, a good starting point is 10 to 12 touches over the course of 30 to 45 days. Spread those touches out 2 to 3 days apart, you know, 2 to 3 channels, you know, phone, email, and then maybe add social. So all of them are generically going to say that that is what works, and it's sort of up to you at that point to customize it. But with follow-up, the really important thing is a couple things. One, you want to always have something that you can share that's new. Like you don't want to just refer back to things that you previously said all the time. So I'm not going to send the first email and have all of these bullet points in there of how I can help the person and then send the next email and say, hey, did you get my last email? It's like, yeah, they got your last email, dude. You know, you need to ask a more pointed question or have something else to share. So if you're going to send 6 emails, let's say, for example, in that cadence, that first email might focus on the big pain point or the big before that you can focus on, and then the after, the result of that. And then the second email might be, I like using any thoughts question mark. That seems to work pretty well for whatever reason. And then the third email is going to focus on the second big, you know, challenge or pain point and the result associated with that, or the content that you can share that's helpful. Fourth email, quick follow-up. And then you do that. Fifth and sixth email, you have two or three talking points that are all different. You're not running out of things to say. When you go to cold call someone, you can have those same talking points and sort of regurgitate, for lack of a better way of saying it, the same talking points that were from the email, so you can keep everything consistent. But with follow-up, yeah, you need to do it, but you can't just follow up with nothing good to say. Like, there has to be a good message in there, or treat it more like a, and you might not like this, a bump email that simply asks a really short, pointed question. Like, any thoughts? That's one that we see working pretty well.
Okay, now what happens in the case if someone responds and says something like, hey, this is interesting, I've forwarded it along to somebody?
So there's a lot of different things that you can do after that. But what I like to do is, hey, Josh, really appreciate you forwarding that along. One of the things I had a quick question about, just to make sure that I can, you know, help you guys, is do you mind sharing who you sent that out to? And would it be cool if I followed up with them if I didn't hear back?
And assuming that they say that they don't feel comfortable sharing it or you don't hear back, do you end it or do you have a different strategy at that point?
I want to follow up directly with that person one more time. So I say, hey, no problem. Totally understand. Would it be cool if I followed up with you in a week or two if I don't hear back? And most people will say yes to that. And then I can call that person or email them and follow up. And then I'm already multi-threading anyways. If it's a large organization, I'm already going to be prospecting to three or four people. So I just start a conversation with someone else at the company.
And what about with regards to the call to action? Most of the calls to action that I see sounds something like this. Can we talk Tuesday at 3 or 4 for 30 minutes?
So that's an old tactic, in my opinion, that worked well even like a year or two ago. But we have this thing that we say called teach, don't take. So the approach needs to be, I need to teach this prospect something. There needs to be a promise of something in return that they're going to get for spending time with me. So if I'm prospecting to a director or VP of sales, for example, like the thing that I'm going to say, the results piece is, oh, and you know, we're working with several, you know, professional services companies like yours. And one thing when we got all of our clients together that they shared was like a really cool strategy that they're using to increase the response rates on their cold outreach and really lead with more empathy, so their salespeople are staying motivated. I'd love to share that strategy with you. Is it cool if we hop on a call? Or, hey, is that something you'd be interested in learning more about? Or, hey, here's the strategy. I'd like to share the other two with you. Do you have some time later this week? You know, so being more soft with the call to action, and again, giving them some autonomy and letting them say yes, is what I've seen to work better, because the yes is this really small commitment. The yes is, yeah, let's chat. The yes isn't, oh God, I got to make sure this time works for me. I'm committing to 30 minutes of my time. Like, it's a really big commitment, you know, when you think about it, especially with all of the outreach that they're getting these days. So those softer call to actions are what I see working really well. And there isn't a specific one that I see working well. It's a call to action that's very open. It's very conversational. It relates to why you want to hop on a call with them.
Yeah. And I think the fundamental difference here is that when you're asking someone for 30 minutes to jump on a demo, most of the time people aren't in demo buying and demo shopping mode, and they know they're going to get pounced on and sold, and they're not there yet, versus what Jason is talking about, which is looking at your prospects as if they're students, and you're going to teach them what other people like them are doing to be happier. And everybody wants to level up, and a lot of people are curious to know what others like them are doing that they might not know about. So there's a level of like a cliffhanger that he's leaving, especially if you're sharing one of them and that one strategy that you shared in the email was awesome. And they're like, what are these other two? And then you also, you know, kind of fess up and say, hey, by strategy, I mean a thinly disguised sales pitch, but you'll still end up getting two ideas that could potentially help you increase response rates. Like, that again, kind of gets back to the empathy that Jason talked about at the beginning, which is you just own it and you just say it and people will get a little chuckle out of it. And then you make good on that promise. I've seen some people doing this where they then get on the call and default to demo mode. That's a great way to piss people off. So make sure that you do have something to teach that is something new. It can't be, did you know that if you eat fried chicken and don't exercise, you're going to gain weight? You have to have a new perspective or a new take on something. People, generally speaking, want a self-betterment. They want to be a better version of themselves tomorrow than they are today. It's why they listen to podcasts. And when you marry that up with, here's what other people like you are doing to get to be happier that you might not know about, it's a great recipe for starting a conversation, not necessarily giving a demo.
Yeah. The easiest way to get that, in my experience, is not to hop on a call with your clients, but to get your clients together on a call. So if you have a couple of clients or customers that are in similar industries or that would benefit from speaking with each other, we did this at the very beginning of all the COVID-19 stuff. And I was amazed. Like when we got three or four of them on a Zoom call together, I was just taking notes the entire time. They were talking to each other and like, oh, have you tried this? Here's a great idea. And I got all of these insights that I can then take to my prospecting. Hey, I ran a Zoom call with three or four of our clients in your industry last week, and they shared some really cool stuff that I didn't really think of that I think you would find really helpful for this reason. Is it cool if I share it with you? Or, hey, here's one of those things. You want to hop on a call? I'd love to run you through the rest of them. But you're going to get these really cool outside of the box, you know, sort of ideas that you're not going to be able to think of because you're a salesperson, right? You're not doing what your clients do, to your point earlier. So that, in my experience, has been the easiest way to get something really quick by just organizing a one-hour Zoom call with, you know, three or four of your customers.
Let me unpack this a little bit. So you reached out to three or four of your blissful customers. Mm-hmm. And what was in it for them? So you said, hey, I'm organizing an event virtually where other people like you are going to share some ideas around how to increase response rates, and you'll get to hear from people and vice versa. And they're like, sure, I would jump on that. And then you just hosted that and just let them go, and you were the moderator?
Dude, it was literally that easy. So we did this with a couple different sets, but one of the subsets we did, because we work with nonprofits that do corporate development, is I just said, hey, we have three or four other nonprofit clients, and what I thought would be really cool is to get on a call together and brainstorm ideas that we could use to get partnerships right now, especially with your outreach. Be down to do that. No arguments at all. Everyone was down to hop on that. And then when I actually did the call, I didn't really have to do a lot of moderating. I came from a place of just, I want to learn. And I just opened with, you know, hey, you guys, I have a few ideas I want to share, but really I want to leave it up to you guys to connect because I don't do what you do. And I thought this would be helpful to talk to other people in your space that aren't competing directly and see if we can help brainstorm some ideas. And everyone just took turns sharing what they do, man. It was the easiest call to run ever. And I just got pages of notes from it.
And did you moderate it? Did you have certain questions, or did it sort of take a life on its own once everyone got on the call?
It definitely took a life of its own. I didn't prepare any questions in advance outside of, hey, you want to partner with these types of companies. What do you think are some creative ways that you could get in touch with them? Or what are some ideas that you have with partnering with them? That was it. Yeah, they naturally had a lot of questions. It was really easy to run. I don't think you can pull this off with a big group, by the way. I think you could do it with maybe half a dozen to, you know, 10 people.
So let's talk a little bit about this, Chase. I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Sure.
Let's imagine that you are selling, I don't know, HR software, or you're selling, you know, you pick whatever you're selling. How might that play itself out if you're like an SDR or you're an AE, assuming you have buy-in from your manager? You would find a topic that other people like them would be interested in, and you reach out saying, hey, we're doing this like summit or this seminar?
That's not even a seminar. This is a really casual, this is just a Zoom call. So the way I'd reach out, I'd say, hey, Josh, you know, being a director of HR and we've worked together, I know a couple things are really important to you. And what I'm hearing from our other clients is, one, they want to know, so let's pretend it's right now. Let's use COVID as an example, right? That a lot of you are wanting to know how to best make this transition to working from home and keeping employee engagement really high. The other thing is, insert whatever, I don't work with HR people. So employee engagement I know is important to them, and probably one other thing. And the reason I was reaching out is I wanted to get you and a few of our other clients that are running in similar industries but not competing on a call to see how everyone can increase employee engagement and really help with this transition to working from home. You down to hop on a call like that?
And you'd get about five or six people. I love this idea because of a few things. First, it's really sort of bred to the masses here. I mean, everyone wants to learn from someone else, but also the asset that you create, you can do so much with it. You could turn it into LinkedIn posts. You can certainly use it, as Jason alluded to earlier, in your cold email follow-up by taking segments of it and giving away in an email one of the strategies and seeing if they'd be down to learn some more over a conversation. Or you could just plain old send it to them as well. You could also take it and send it off to a company like Rev and have it converted into a PDF or even a physical book that you could actually send to people. So it's a really smart tactic that I don't think I've heard before, Jason. I think this is new for me.
Dude, it works so well. Where people are making a mistake right now is they want to lead with value, right? And have some insight to share. And the insight is the equivalent of me reaching out to someone to help with prospecting and saying, hey, did you know that cold calling is a really effective way of getting a hold of prospects? And they're like, okay, thanks, Captain Obvious. Yeah, heard of that one before. You know what I mean? But if I said, hey, you know, I'm working with, you know, a dozen other clients right now in your industry, and we found a few subject headings that work really well to get 50%+ response rates. But we also found a way to really be more empathetic in the approach, because that's what everyone wants to do right now, is be empathetic with their prospects in a way that also gets a conversation started, so they can get the sales process started if it's appropriate. Would you be interested in hopping on a call and talking through some of those subject lines and what people are doing to lead with more empathy, yet still keep the sales conversation going? Dude, people want to know what their peers are doing. And I think the mistake that we're making is we're guessing. We're guessing what might be valuable for them instead of just talking to our existing customers. And it's helpful for them to network with each other too. After we did this, they connected offline also, because they're all not competing with each other. And they all have these different strengths and weaknesses around how they approach things. I mean, you'll just get so much gold. The ROI in your time is so good from doing this. It's the easiest thing you could put together. It's so much easier to do than to put together one of those, you know, PowerPoints I'm sure you've seen, where you gather all this data and all these stats and all this other stuff and you put it in. It's like, those are just stats. Cool.
Totally.
It's a stat. You know, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, what's a tactic? Like, how can I actually apply that?
Yeah, I love that too. The other interesting thing about that approach is that you don't have to have all the answers. A lot of times salespeople, AEs or SDRs, you haven't done their job. You don't really know what these insights are. It kind of takes the pressure off of you. The other thing that I really like about it, I was just thinking like for myself, is if I were to get something like that saying, hey, Josh, you know, we've been talking to a lot of age group triathletes about how to make sure that the run portion of a triathlon doesn't end up feeling like a Frankenstein, you know, walk, even in hot weather. And they're going to share some training tips for, you know, training in the heat. Would you be down for, you know, learning some of this stuff? I'm like all in.
Yeah. Where do I sign up?
your prospects are the same way there. So that's I love the strategy behind that. I think it's super smart and interesting and certainly different.
One, if I could comment real quick on that you said, I think is so important, is you don't have to be the expert. Even what we do, like you and I, with you know, training and workshops and coaching and stuff, we don't have to be the experts in what we do either. A lot of it is just sharing what our clients are doing and helping them implement that as well. So as the SDR, the BDR, the AE, whatever you are, you do not have to be the expert. You should be like the Tim Ferriss, essentially, the person that collects all of these best practices from the people that you work with and then share them. That's really your value as a salesperson, in my opinion, is not you being the guru and knowing everything, because you never will, because you don't do their job. It's collecting this information and making it easily digestible for the people that you work with.
And for clarity, the exception to this is me, of course. Everyone listening to this, you know, I am the expert. I am the only one that knows everything. No, something else too that I really like about this approach is that it just takes pressure off of you as well. Like so many times I talk to people that feel like outreach doesn't feel good on their soul because they're always asking people for something, a meeting or their time, and it really grates on them and therefore they don't want to do it. They think the phone is a cactus. But even if you turn this into a cold call, it feels very different, because when you start to facilitate groups like this that are creating a community of learning, it just feels better on your soul. It just feels better to do the outreach. Of course, we're not saying you don't have to lead with your product and all that stuff. You can certainly have that in your mix, but it's also, you have to touch people 6 or 7 times. This is certainly, you know, an approach that you can use to be able to follow up in a way that's not so annoying.
Yeah. And if you're making a cold call, to your point, you don't have to like make it so hard about, I need to assume the sale and get the meeting. It's, hey, Josh, you know, I know it probably caught you in the middle of something here, so I'll be quick. I've been talking to a lot of VPs of sales, and one of the things I'm hearing as a really big priority with their team is, you know, making sure they lead with more empathy in their outreach, but they also want to keep, you know, want to keep setting meetings. And I don't know if you're dealing with that right now, but we met with a bunch of our clients. We found out some techniques that they're using that I'd love to share with you or someone on your team. But I'm curious, like, how are you guys making sure to continue the conversations with your prospects? What are you hearing out there? Yeah, that approach is so disarming. I'm not pretending to be the expert. You know, none of that. It makes for a really easy way to start a conversation.
It feels good on the soul. The idea that, again, it kind of gets back to the beginning of the podcast when we talked about, you know, most of the time when you do outreach, people aren't in buy mode, mm-hmm. you know, a very small percentage, but they are in learn mode. And being able to teach something or offer something that's useful that can help someone be smarter is going to perk a lot of ears up. Again, it's why you're listening to this podcast. So Jason, you have said it all, my friend. If people want to learn more about you and what you do, how do they do that?
So there's a couple of ways. One, I put together that PDF for you guys. So it's blissfulprospecting.com/Josh. And that's going to have that reply method all on one page there. So essentially the framework that I used to reach out to you, Josh, and the framework that we teach and use for our prospecting. So you grab that at blissfulprospecting.com/Josh. And then I'm really active, you know, on LinkedIn. That would be the other place to connect. So posting stuff every day on prospecting, how to get appointments, what's working right now, and all that good stuff. So there's just a ton of free content out there that you can check out.
Jason, thank you for being so transparent, sharing all of your secrets, and being a pure delight, and also giving me another chance. Little behind the scenes, we actually tried this podcast once before, and because I have no idea what I'm doing, I somehow deleted it. I don't think that's the case this time, but hopefully this one sees the light of day. Thank you so much, Jason, for giving me a second shot on the podcast.
Absolutely, man.